up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello and welcome to New Horizons. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Thanks for your company. Today we have part two of our series on the recently held Victorian Human Rights Oration delivered by Graham Innes. And the oration this year was on the right to work for people with a disability. Here's Graham.
The right to work has been acknowledged internationally since at least 1944. As part of a recommendation on employment during the global transition from war to peace, the ILO stated that disabled workers, and I quote, whatever the origin of their disability, should be provided with full opportunities for rehabilitation, specialised vocational guidance, training and retraining, and employment on useful work. The right to work of all people was enshrined by the United Nations 4 years later in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Other conventions followed, like the International Labour Organization's 1958 Discrimination, Employment and Occupation Convention. And although it makes no direct mention of people with disabilities, states' parties can take, quote, special measures, unquote, to provide disability discrimination which, quote, has the effect of nullifying or impairing equality of opportunity or treatment in employment or occupation, unquote. However, although these and several other international and national laws and policies recognise the right to work, something was lacking. Many people with disabilities faced and still face large and systemic hurdles while trying to find work. The need to strengthen basic universal human rights for people with disabilities eventually led to the development of the 2006 United Nations Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. The Disabilities Convention, or as I like to call it, the DISCO, not just because of the Australian habit of shortening things, but because it creates this wonderful image for me of people with disabilities going everywhere, including dancing at the disco. But the DISCO extends universal human rights and sets out specific measures countries can take to improve rights and protection for people with disabilities. Article 27 requires that states' parties recognise, quote, the right of persons with disabilities to work on an equal basis with others, unquote. And several measures are suggested to safeguard this right, including preventing discrimination, promoting education, and affirmative action programs. The Howard government of the day didn't initially support the development of this convention. However, after some significant lobbying of then Attorney General Philip Ruddock, we got on board and took a more active role in the negotiation process, going on to This Is Australia to ratify the convention in 2008. And it was exciting for me to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the 2006 convention just last week on the International Day of People with Disabilities on 3rd December. Uniquely, this convention was the first time that the United Nations invited the people whose lives would be directly affected to participate in the process of drafting one of their treaties. More than 400 non-government organisations and other civil society organisations contributed alongside bureaucrats and diplomats. And one strong example was the contribution from People with Disabilities Australia. The employment right, or rather a non-discrimination provision, has also been the subject of both Victorian and Commonwealth legislation. And in Victoria, this right is reinforced by your Charter of Rights and Responsibilities. So, how are these and other conventions and legislation relevant for us? Although disability advocates have fought hard and made much progress, even without law and conventions to back them up, International human rights laws create an important benchmark for protecting the rights of people with disabilities. For example, it was the Disability Convention which led to then Prime Minister Rudd announcing the development of a national disability strategy as the central mechanism for implementing our international obligations. So we have policy as well as international, national and state laws. But you know, it's one thing to have laws and policies. It's quite another to translate those rights into reality. Most Australians have a reasonable expectation that they'll get breakfast each day before they go to work. And for most, it's met. Most Australians who want to participate in paid work have a reasonable expectation that they'll get a job. And for most, it's met. But for Australians with disabilities seeking a job, whilst most of us in this room would argue that getting a job is a reasonable expectation, it's not one that is currently met for at least half of that group. So what are you, as rights practitioners, going to do about helping to ensure that this reasonable expectation is met in the future? And how many people with disabilities does your organisation employ? Because, to quote David Morrison, in the context of the Australian Defence Forces, the standards you walk past are the standards you accept. So if you're not contributing to the employment of people with disabilities, if you're walking past those standards, you're accepting the non-compliance with this right. And those are the challenges that I want to pose to you today in this oration. Consideration of how to improve employment opportunities for people with disability is more timely than ever. Rising living standards and better healthcare mean longer life expectancy, and that means two things. First, as we get older, we're more and more likely to have a significant disability. ABS figures tell us that 20% of Australians, or more than 4 million people, have disabilities, and that this proportion is rising, in particular with the ageing of the population. The Australian Institute of Health and Welfare predicts that, on average, men in Australia as they age can expect to live 19 years with a disability and 5 years with a severe or profound disability, while women, living longer, can expect 21 years of disability and 8 years of severe or profound disability. Of course, people with disabilities such as me are helping you out, aren't we? Because many of us experience above the average number of years of disability. Second, the ageing of the population reduces the relative size of the workforce to the population overall. In coming years, there will be fewer of us to support more of us. So as many people as possible need to be working and paying taxes rather than receiving welfare benefits. Added to this, there are shortages of skilled workers in our economy, to the extent that increasing numbers of young people are leaving school early to move straight into training for trades in current demand. So what better time to ensure that disability does not needlessly prevent people developing skills and working, and that employees with skills who acquire disability do not waste those skills in unemployment or in underemployment? But you know what? Australia is missing the boat. Lower participation rates plus higher unemployment rates mean that only 53% of working age people with disability in Australia are employed, compared to 83% of people without disability, half compared to 4 out of 5. And I actually think that that statistic may overrepresent the truth, as many people with disabilities have actually withdrawn from the labour market. And people with disability on average earn lower incomes and frequently work well below our capacity. Government after government have failed to address these problems. And the current Commonwealth Government, unless it significantly changes direction, will also fail. It has developed a welfare plan. Yes, it plans to get people off welfare. But it has not developed a jobs plan. Today, I want to share my personal story. And it's in my autobiography, which Kristen referred to. But that's not why I'm telling it. I'm telling you the story because it represents the story of many others with disabilities in our community. And sadly, whilst my initial employment story was many years ago, nothing has changed. One of the largest barriers which people with disabilities in Australia face is the attitude barrier. We are limited by the soft bigotry of low expectations. Employers say, it's all too hard. It might not work. There's too much risk, and people with disabilities will never fit in. Most employers have no understanding of disability until they have a direct connection with it, and so they make assumptions which are negative and incorrect. After completing my law degree at Sydney University, I started the process of finding a job. And over a 12-month period, I applied for about 30 jobs in legal positions with government agencies and the private sector. I didn't get any of those jobs. Employers just couldn't understand how a blind person could function as a lawyer. And no matter how much I explained the methods that I would employ, they were just not convinced. I had, growing up as a person with a disability, experienced some discrimination before. But this was the first time that I really struck the wall of discrimination which many people with disabilities face. And for 12 months, I couldn't get past it. I finally despaired and took a job in the New South Wales Public Service as a clerical assistant. I used to joke that I was the only clerical assistant in the public service with a law degree. But at least it was a job. It was a job with state lotteries, where one of my duties was to answer the phone and tell people the winning lotto numbers. And you need a law degree to do that. I was made redundant from that role by an answering machine. I moved to the Registrar General's office, where I spent my time still answering phone calls from the public. But at least I was learning much more about the issues around conveyancing and property transfers. And from there, I progressed, still as a clerk, to the Department of Consumer Affairs. And it was this department, or more specifically, the senior legal officer in that department, who gave me my first legal opportunity, as a clerk and then as a legal officer. He wasn't totally convinced that I could work as a lawyer, but he, unlike all of the others, was prepared to give it a go. And Dave's change of attitude changed my life. I was finally being a lawyer, and I progressed from there to my role at the Australian Human Rights Commission and had the chance, amongst other things, to advocate for jobs for other people with disabilities. So, what's the problem? Why are there thousands of stories just like mine about people with disabilities? Why are we employed at a rate 30% lower than that of the general population? Why, when we, and these are researched findings, not my assertions, why when we take less sick leave, when we make fewer workers' compensation claims, when we stay longer in jobs, and when we are more committed employees, and on top of that, we're better problem solvers, we'd have to be, to live our lives, why don't we get jobs? We have to convince the people making the employment decisions to change their mindset and start saying those small but powerful words to people with disabilities. There's four of them. You start on Monday. We need a jobs plan. We need to learn from the Westpacs, the ANZs, the Telstras, the IBMs, the Woolworths and others, all members of the Australian Network on Disability, the employer representative body. We need to set targets for the employment of people with disabilities, because the old business maxim is very true. What you don't count doesn't count. The Commonwealth government employ people with a disability at a shameful rate of 2.9% when there are 15% of us of working age in the population. State governments are similar. But the Federal Department of Health and Ageing, bucking the trend, are at 10%. And the National Disability Insurance Agency is at 16%. So we know that it can be done. Westpac are at 13%. So we know that it can be done. We need to listen to employers and meet their needs. We need to make it safer to venture off the disability support pension and into work. We need to offer internships and stepping into programs to give people with disabilities a taste of work and to give other employees a taste of people with disabilities. We need to offer every politician an extra staff member if they employ a person with a disability, just as is done in the United States. We need to give willing employers some KPIs and some funding and 12 months to see if they can meet their planned targets. Because apart from the benefits that these actions would bring to people with disabilities, if only one third of that 30% disability jobs gap moved off welfare and into work, the National Disability Insurance Scheme would run at a profit within a decade. There again, not my back of the envelope calculations, they're Deloitte's tested figures. Many private employers are willing to commit to these processes, and I've worked with many of them during my time as Disability Discrimination Commissioner. But they need to learn from their peers and be resourced to get on with it, not be surrounded by government red tape and restrictions, because that's the problem with the Commonwealth employment schemes at the moment. Limiting rules and bureaucratic disincentives are, to paraphrase another of my favourite artists, Missy Higgins, a danger government are addicted to. The various services contracted to find jobs for people with disabilities are just not giving us value for money in terms of long-term outcomes gained for dollars spent. So we need to find another way. When I was young, many people told me that I couldn't be a lawyer, and many others wouldn't give me a legal job. But I, and people who supported me all those years ago, knew that I could. I can't imagine my life without the chance to take the risks that I took to get where I am. I can't imagine a society diminished because it lacked the contribution that many people with disabilities make in all areas of life. And I'm profoundly saddened by the knowledge that many people with disabilities were never encouraged to take those risks and grab those opportunities. People with disabilities want to be included. It's up to you to include us. So each of you should provide opportunities for people with disabilities. Don't be stopped by thinking that you, one individual, can't make a difference. Because, as Eleanor Roosevelt said, in reality, it's only individuals who do make a difference. Encourage people with disabilities to remove barriers, to grasp opportunities and live on the edge.
Graham Innes there delivering the Human Rights Oration heard in Melbourne in early December. I'm Vaughan Bennison. That's it for New Horizons this week. If you'd like to get in touch with BCA, you can call 1-800-033-660 or email bca@bca.org.au. That phone number again, 1-800-033-660, the email address bca@bca.org.au. Do take care until next week.
We'll achieve the realization of a dream. Of our dreams.